yesterday's London Times. Jen, how you doing?
Well, I'm pretty good, because things are different, but in a good way. We've got our friends.
Today we're not alone in our little studio sanctum. We have two friends along joining us today for something special.
Yes. Yay. And they are special friends. They've been here since the start of the journey. They are so supportive. Should we introduce them?
Please.
All right. Well, sitting next to me is our good friend, Zelly. Hi, Zelly.
Hi, Jen. How are you?
I'm great. It's so good to have you here.
And we have Holly here, too. Holly is part of our quartet. We get together about once a week and get into all kinds of shenanigans.
Hello.
Well, I think you know why we've called you all together tonight.
They sort of know. They have an idea.
We're going to play a game tonight. Now, I have a question for you before we get going. Does anyone remember when you were a kid and there were that series of books called Choose Your Own Adventure?
Oh, yes. Oh,
yeah. Okay, yeah. So white covers, you can picture them. White covers, red stripe at the top that said Choose Your Own Adventure. And for those of you who are listening who have never read one, I remember one where it was like the Wild West. Welcome to the Wild West. And they set the scene. There's tumbleweeds blowing and you're there to find the train robber. And then it'll say on the first page, if you want to go and talk to the sheriff, turn to page 3. But if you want to go explore that ramshackle shack down the road, turn to page 11. And the choices you made throughout would send you all over the book. And your outcomes could be very, very different. In fact, that particular book, yeah, I died in the desert. Mm-hmm. It happened. Yeah.
I died in outer space. And I may or may not have cheated and sometimes looked ahead.
You know.
It's possible.
You know, the way I feel, Jen, like, thank God we learned our lessons that way. You know, we got like a safe way to make some poor choices.
There's worse things, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
So we have written a Adventures in London, Choose Your Own Adventure, for our friends here. We've got some.
We hope they'll still stay our friends.
Who knows? They may.
You don't know what's in store.
I don't want them to die in a desert. Of course, that would be unlikely in London. But still. Yes. So, are you game? Are you up for playing with us tonight?
I'm totally up for it. I think I remember dying in a cave.
How did you die, Molly?
Spoilers, Zelly, spoilers. We can't tell you that.
So maybe that's why you guys chose me. I have not yet died in any of my Choose Your Own Adventures.
Oh. All of our hopes are pinned on you.
London could be my first place.
Buckle up, friend.
Just so that we all know what's going on, I'll run you through the setup. Here we are. We're in London. The city is yours tonight. You have an Oyster card for your pass, and you have all the time in the world. And speaking of time, tonight you'll be unstuck in time. Things normally closed during the pandemic, or maybe even closed for decades, might open their doors up to you.
Or centuries.
Or centuries, even. There may be people long gone that suddenly become your companions along the way. And Holly, Zelly, you will be making choices. And sometimes you will be asked to make a unified choice. And sometimes you will be given the option to do something independent. So, are you ready? Ready to get the party started?
Yeah. I'm ready.
Okay. Right. I know you guys are really hungry right now, so we're going to head to a pub. Let's grab a bite and wet your whistle. Now, just to let you know, there are about 3,500 pubs in London. And we're going to whittle down the list for you.
Thank you.
This could be a very long episode.
Yes.
So I've got two. And so I'm going to tell you two, and I want you to choose together. And if you need to discuss, that's fine. Your two choices are Cahoots or the Bletchley. Cahoots or the Bletchley.
Have you heard of either of these?
I have not. Okay. I know what Cahoots means, but like, I don't know what Bletchley means.
Like we're in cahoots.
Yeah.
Okay. Or Bletchley.
That doesn't sound very appetizing, does it?
No. Cahoots?
Yeah.
Okay, cahoots,
we're
please.
Looks like we're going for cahoots. Very good. So both of those pubs are current pubs. currently open in London. And Cahoots, we're going to go down, we're going to take the tube down to Oxford Street, and we're heading to Soho. So we're going to Carnaby Street, famous, of course, for music and fashion of the 60s, but we're going to dial the clock back a little bit more, as they do every night in this pub. So this Cahoots takes us to another era. We're going to enter near the dark, red-tiled, vintage underground sign. You have to give a password to get in, and a little wink doesn't hurt either. And you're off, and you go down an antique wooden escalator deep under the ground to an actual World War II-era emergency air raid shelter that was in a former unused tube station. Yeah. So that's where this cafe is, this pub. Now, it might interest you to know that during the war, there were three designated tube stations that were supposed to be shelters. That was the plan, anyway.
And like all good plans.
Like all good plans. Imagine you've seen bombs going off, and you're trying to sleep at night in your house. You're like, I think I'll just go to my nearest tube station. And that's what everyone did. They just went to their nearest tube station and brought their stuff. And officials tried to stop it. They're like, no, there are three designated around the city, and no one was having it. So they just went along with it. And one estimate that I read said that there were about 177,000 people in underground shelters every night in London.
I can't imagine.
Isn't that crazy? People. Well, your episode when you talked about...
Yeah, we learned at Bethnal Green, it was 5,000 people, I believe, nightly. I mean, it was a community unto itself.
For sure. So when you get to this... down the escalator, you might be sitting inside an antique train carriage or next to one. Jen, they have antique moquettes on all the fabrics.
If you're not familiar, that's the design of the seats. So it's basically the upholstery, and it's a particular, how to describe it? It's somewhat sort of checked, and there's different, depending on the actual line you're on, like the District, Circle, Hammersmith, Bakerloo, there's different color schemes within the checks. So it's pretty iconic. It's fabric. You can actually buy skirts and handbags and stuff made out of moquette. I have a handbag that I got as a Christmas gift one year. It's Bakerloo. It's Bakerloo from the 60s.
Nice.
Yeah.
So also to tie into a previous episode, when you did your episode about make do and repair. Yes. Is that what it was? Make do and repair?
Make do and mend.
Make do and mend. Mm-hmm. So they have a spirit of make do, repair, reuse, and reimagine at this pub. So when you order your drinks, they may come in like a milk jug, or they might come in a flask or a old thermos. So they're just making do like we had to back in those days. Imagine, if you will, the lighting is nice and dim. Many nights they have a live swing band playing. Now, all you need is a drinking buddy. So I'm going to give you your next choice. We have the place. I'm going to give you two first names, and I want you to choose one. And I want you probably to, well, I'm curious if you are going to agree on one or, up to you.
And so their choices are?
Emma or Maggie. Do you want to have a drink with Emma or Maggie?
So, I can't imagine a better drinking buddy than Zelly, but I'm going to go with Emma because of our book club reference.
Jane Austen's Emma. Now, Zelly, you have a connection to the name Emma as well.
I do. I have a lovely daughter named Emma.
Is that the name that you're choosing as well?
I would love to choose that name as well.
Okay, let's go with Emma. Yes. I think you'll be very happy with this choice.
I think they'll be very happy with this choice. Yes.
The Emma that I'm talking about was born in London in West Hampstead to a theatrical family. She said that she never had to rebel because her family gave her so much freedom that she never had anything to rebel against. Now, young Emma had a passion for language and literature. She took A-levels in English, Latin, and French. She decided to be a writer. And so, with a scholarship to Cambridge, she was off and running. Now, she got to Cambridge and she started to explore. A couple of us in this room are English Lit majors, and she read a book that I know I read when I was an English Lit major called The Mad Woman in the Attic. It's about Victorian women, and she really took the message deep about Victorian women and traditional roles. And all this thinking about gender roles caused Emma to shave her head, get a motorcycle, and become a punk rocker.
Oh, I so want to have a drink with her.
I know already, right? Just keep listening. She did not want to be ladylike or romantic. She wanted to be funny. And this is when her family's theatrical genes just kind of willed out. And she found her way into the Cambridge Footlights. It's a very famous theatrical troupe. Many of the Monty Pythons had been there, and she was a big fan of Monty Python. So she joined them, and soon she was the female lead. From that time to this time, Emma has had a fantastic career. I can't think of anyone more fun and fascinating to share a drink with than Miss Emma Thompson. You guys are with Emma Thompson, best storyteller. What a great...
Did you know it was Emma Thompson?
No. I can't imagine. No, I've never seen her with the shaved head.
I know. After that, she did spikes, she said, after she shaved
it. I mean, motorcycle. I'm here for it.
Wow. Yeah. Just to let you know, if you had chosen Maggie, you were going to get Margaret Thatcher. So good job. Good on you. Good job.
I mean, she's still there.
I think it was going to be Maggie. That,
I mean, it's almost like dying in the desert. Wow. Poor Maggie.
Now,
just
Maggie
kidding.
Smith. We thought, yeah, Maggie That's Smith would... invite her to the table.
There
yeah.
you go. So now that you have your place and your companion, man, we need waitress.
I mean, they've got to be getting hungry.
Yeah, and
I would
you have
think.
That waitress experience in your past. I thought That's, you were perfect to be a server tonight.
Well, thank you. Yeah, you have a few choices here at the pub tonight. We're going to assume that some traditional fare is being offered. You can order for yourselves. And if you'd like to order something for Emma as well, I think that would be okay. We don't want to eat in front of her. So here's your choices. And again, if you happen to both want the same one, that's okay. If you don't, that's fine too. So your choices are, you can have a Lancashire hot pot, Cornish pasties, bubble and squeak, or toad in the hole. I'll tell you more about them after you make your choice.
Okay.
Because you don't want to look uncool. You're just going to order. You don't want to ask your server a bunch of questions. You're regulars.
I don't want to look uncool in front of Emma.
No.
I mean, with her shaved head and
I was
all.
Hearing about that past. Yeah.
No kidding.
So, Holly, go ahead. Why didn't you order first?
Lancashire hot pot.
Lancashire hot pot, Cornish pasties, bubble and squeak, or toad in the hole.
I'm going to go with bubble and squeak.
Okay, and before I explain that, I am going to take Zelly's order because I think that's only fair that she shouldn't get to hear first. So, Zelly, what are you thinking?
I think I'm going to have to go with toad in the hole.
Okay, and Emma, what do you think she might want? Anything? Anybody have any ideas for Emma? We still have... let's see. You ordered, Holly, you ordered
Bubble
and Squeak. And you ordered, okay, so nobody's ordered the Lancashire hot pot or the Cornish pasties.
What do you think she'd like, Holly?
What does the server recommend tonight?
You know, I think I would go, I think it's a nice day for a Lancashire hot pot, personally. So we'll go for that. And we'll start there. The Lancashire hot pot, which Emma's going to enjoy, it's a lamb stew with a bed of thinly sliced potatoes on top. It's cooked in butter, of course, and thickened with broth, of course. You have to have the gravy. And you can include carrots for added color and crunch. So it's sort of almost like a roast casserole, kind of. It's sort of the ultimate comfort food. And it's great on a rainy, cloudy night. That Which is what the good. Weather's like here in Perfect. Our quaint little town at the moment. Holly, you got Bubble and Squeak.
Yeah.
Super fun. Now, today, this dish is primarily a vegetarian dish. It consists mostly of vegetables, primarily potatoes and cabbage. They're pan-fried, and the reason it's called Bubble and Squeak is the sound that it makes in the skillet.
Hmm.
So back in the day, it was sort of the... Everything must go on Sundays after a Sunday roast. You put it in the pot, and a lot of times people will throw meat in there. But it's basically, what do we have left in our fridge? Let's fry it up in the pan with some cabbage and serve it up. So, works for me. Liesl, you're getting toad in the hole.
Sounds great.
It's a personal. It's a personal favorite, to be honest. Not only does it have such a whimsical name, it's also extremely tasty. It's pan-fried sausages that are baked in an egg-based batter and then tossed with onion gravy and vegetables. Gravy is a recurring theme. Yeah. Lots of gravy. So how did it get its name? It's pretty simple. So when it's cooked, the sausages tend to poke out and just peep through, looking like a toad coming out of the hole.
Oh. I'd eat all of those. That sounds good.
Yeah. Sound good.
Well, and Cornish pasties. Nobody ordered those, but they're basically a little hand pie. They come from Cornwall originally. That's where they've come from, and you can still get some very tasty ones down in Cornwall. But it's like a little hand pie with meat. You can find frozen pasties in the food section. You know, you can throw in the microwave or whatever. Obviously not as good as the fresh ones. But, yeah, very common. Much better than a Hot Pocket kind of thing.
It's a convenience food.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. And originally, miners were who ate them. Because it was something easy to eat. So yeah, it originated with miners.
I heard that too, and I heard that they kept them underneath because they'd be so cold that would keep them warm, and they would somewhat keep the pasty warm too.
Yes, yes, yeah. I should specify. I'm saying the word miner as in a coal miner, not miners as in children. Right. Yes.
So dessert. It's definitely that time.
Ooh, my favorite part.
Right?
Save room for it.
Yes. And again, I think you should order something for Emma as well. Zelly, I'm going to start with you this time. Holly got to go first the last time. Here's your choices. On the menu tonight, we have Yorkshire Parkin, Victoria Sandwich, British Flapjacks, or Fruit Fool. Mm. I'll read them one more time. Yorkshire Parkin, Victoria Sandwich, British Flapjacks, or Fruit Fool.
I have not heard of any of those. I've heard of Flapjacks before, but I'll try the Fruit Fool.
I just had a feeling you were going to guess that. Okay, so we've got one Fruit Fool. Holly, in addition to the Fruit Fool, you can also choose from British Flapjacks, Victoria Sandwich, or Yorkshire Parkin.
I'm going to go safe and pick something I have heard of, which is the Victoria Sandwich, and I really want to eat one.
Did you hear about that on the British Bake Off?
I did.
I had a feeling. I knew we would discover if one of them was a Bake Off fan or if they remembered it, because yes, it is a regular on the Bake Off of these three. And as you know, Holly, it's not a sandwich. And what we think of as being a sandwich, it's the most iconic British cake there is. It's a layered sponge cake with jam and sweetened cream filling with a dusting of powdered sugar on the top. Super simple, but it's the quintessential British dessert. Now, something you might not know, although maybe they've talked about it on the Bake Off and I haven't caught it, it really should be called the Royal Victoria Sponge. Because it goes back to Queen Victoria herself, who loved the cake with her tea in the afternoon. Now, it goes back way before that, this particular sponge. But the difference is, when Victoria, Queen Victoria, was enjoying it, it's when baking powder was first introduced. And it changed the cake, the chemistry of the cake, completely. So the baking that had been occurring before that was without baking powder, like baking soda. It said baking powder, so I'm assuming that would be baking powder and soda are two different things, correct? Mm-hmm. Okay, so you can tell I'm not a baker. I'm good at baking things from boxes, but you don't need that information. So that was the difference, and that started in 1843. So you're the fool here.
I'm the fool.
The fruit
I have no idea.
Fool. Well,
I'm so glad you picked this because it's super interesting. This goes back, way back to the 1500s. This is one of the oldest desserts there is. It is traditionally, it's made by folding pureed stewed fruit. And the original classic version is with gooseberries. Okay, now today people make it with all kinds of things, currants, strawberries, all sorts of things. But the original was gooseberries. So you fold that into sweet custard. So today, rather than custard, a lot of recipes will use whipped cream. And sometimes they'll add flavoring like rose water, stuff like that. But this was first mentioned as a dessert going back to 1598. And it was made with clotted cream at that time. The first recipe was found from the 17th century. And the word fool, the use of it in this is not entirely clear. There was some people who traced it back to the French, but the Oxford Dictionary itself poo-poos that. They say there's no reason for that. So why it's called a fool, we don't know. But originally, it was also called a trifle sometimes, and it really bears no exact appearance to the trifle other than the fact of the custard and the fruit, which a traditional trifle
would have as well. It does remind me of an amazing trifle that was brought to my workplace, my present company. And I was wondering if it was something like that.
It is similar.
I would like it with custard probably more than the whipped cream.
That is the one thing that a certain friend of yours might make that's not from a box. It's trifle. It might be me. So Emma hasn't had a dessert yet. You've had your fruit fool. You are eating your Victoria sponge. Do you think Emma would want something? I mean, there's still a lovely Yorkshire parkin on the dessert platter. And there's also some British flapjacks.
I feel like flapjacks are familiar to me. We could order those for her to see if they're the same or go with the one we haven't heard of. Have you heard of parkin? What do you think?
Let's go with the parkin.
Okay. We'll go with the parkin.
Honestly, if I was going to order something knowing what they were, this might be what I would have gotten. And actually, Sally, it's kind of funny. We must have been thinking about desserts earlier today because I was telling you how I like sticky bread type desserts. And this definitely fits that. It's a sweet and spicy ginger cake made with oatmeal and black treacle. Are you familiar with treacle?
No.
It's a
I've
little,
heard of it, but I...
It's similar to molasses. It's actually a little bit sweeter than molasses. It has less sucrose extracted from it, so it's a little bit sweeter. But it also still has that mild bitterness that molasses has. So, yeah, it's... The interesting thing about this dessert is it's best if you make it about 2 weeks before you want to eat it and you let it sit and you let it sit refrigerated and it gets stickier and it tastes even better as it absorbs all the juices and things like that. So yeah,
spices. That
yes. Sounds like yes. It does sound really good. And the flapjack, you were kind of onto something there. You were wondering, and a flapjack is not what we think of as a flapjack. We, in certain parts of North America, it would be called a pancake, and it'd be interchangeable with flapjack and pancake. In Britain, and I believe in parts of Canada as well, it's actually an oat cake.
Oh.
So, yeah, it's like an oat bar or an oat cake, and they're usually covered with a sweet, buttery-type syrup. So they're crisp on the outside, but chewy on the inside.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I'm picturing those kind of like hockey puck shape oat cakes.
I think, you know, I was looking, there was circular ones. There was also ones shaped more like store-bought granola bar type shapes like that as well. I think it's maybe chef's choice from what I could tell. I've never had one, but it does sound really good. I like the crispy on the outside, chewy on the inside. So I really don't think you could go wrong with any of those, to be honest. So but I think you made some good choices there. So you're probably getting full at this point.
I'm still with us. You know, and when I'm full, especially in London, I want to take a walk in the fresh air, walk up and down some streets, maybe do some little looking in windows of the shops. And that's what you're going to do next. And I'm going to say two words, and the word that you choose will determine the next part of your evening. And this can either be a unified decision or a split decision. You can be independent this time around. The two words are Billingsgate or Sloan?
I think Zelly went first the last time. So, Holly, if you would like to go.
I'm going to go for Sloan.
Sloan. Lisa?
Are you going to be a pioneer? Or are you going to follow up?
Zelly, you walking with me?
I was thinking it would be nice to walk together. I think I'll walk with you to Sloan.
Are you sure you don't want to be independent on this one?
Is she going to die on Sloan?
I don't know.
Oh. Choose your own adventure,
choose
girl.
Choose your own, okay. Well, you two are intriguing me. Now I feel like maybe I've made the wrong decision.
Are you going to be a trailblazer? You can change your mind.
Pretty curious about Billingsgate.
Let's do it.
I'll go to Billingsgate and we will meet you after Sloan.
Okay. All right. So you said Sloan first. So let me tell you what you have just chosen. You chose Sloan. Score. Givenchy, Balenciaga, Tom Ford, Ferragamo, Louis Vuitton, Burberry, Dior, Gucci, Versace, Dolce & Gabbana, all of them, Valentino, Giorgio Armani, Chanel, Yves Saint Laurent, Pucci, Hermes, they're all there.
I get to do some window shopping.
I know.
We're giving you some yesterday's London Times play money. You just go for it.
And the doors are all open. I don't care what time of night it is. It's happening tonight. Sloane Street runs north to south from Knightbridge to Sloane Square and is lined with the finest flagship stores. So often those are the premier store of that brand. And both of those places, Sloane Street and Sloane Square, are named for Sir Hans Sloane, who owned the land in the 1700s. He was a physician to the wealthy, but he always kept alive his two childhood interests or loves, and they were nature and collecting. He loved plants and collecting. In his lifetime, he would travel around the world, and at his death, he had 171,000 items that were bequeathed around town to the British Museum, the British Library, the Natural History Museum. On a trip to Barbados, he tasted chocolate for the first time. Now, they drank chocolate, a chocolate drink, and he found it too bitter. He found that adding milk to it improved its taste. So we've got Sir Hans Sloane to thank for chocolate milk. I do have to mention, though, as we do in our modern world, that he did not build up his collection or his wealth on his own. No. He worked for a time as a doctor on a slave plantation, so they helped him collect the specimens. He also married an heiress to sugar plantations worked by slaves. So, you know, sometimes that idea of a self-made man, you know, really or not. If you're in London, you might be familiar with the term calling someone a Sloane or a Sloane Ranger. Those are both terms. If you are calling someone that, it's kind of like a stereotype of the very upper crust Londoners. It assumes a certain look and a certain outlook on life. In the 80s, there was a book called The Sloane Ranger Handbook that was a bestseller on both sides of the pond. And that was the 80s, so think about Princess Diana and kind of some of her looks. She was, particularly before the wedding, called the ultimate Sloane Ranger. So that is your evening at Sloane Street, doing some shopping. Now let's turn to Billingsgate.
I'm feeling very nervous.
Oh no. Let's see. Billingsgate. We're going south of the Thames to the Billingsgate Fish Market.
All right.
In the Canary Wharf, Isle of Dogs area of town. There's 13 acres of fish, Zelly. 98 stalls, 30 shops, about 25,000 pounds of fish are sold here every year, for God's sakes. 6 years from now, in the year, what would that be, 2027, there's going to be a big celebration because it is this fish market's 800th birthday. Is that inconceivable? The land was granted by Edward III in 1327. So that's, you know, just a interesting thing.
800 and years of fish, wow. Zelly.
800, in the same place.
800 years of fish.
And I have all of the yesterday's London Times play money I can spend
I think Holly's holding up a card. I think it says, "Will Zelly shower before she meets back up with me?"
I mean, is that what that brand says? New clothes.
I'm holding up a card that says, "Holly, bring cologne."
Some perfume. Fun fact. If you look up in good old Merriam-Webster, if you look up the word Billingsgate with a small b, it is defined as, quote, coarsely abusive language. You know, those fish market, they've been there for 800 years. Mm-hmm. The language has picked up. So this fish market was so notorious for its crude language that resounded in all of the stalls that by the middle of the 17th century, Billingsgate was just a synonym for foul language. So enjoy the fish, deli, but hey, watch the Billingsgate.
Hey, you and Emma go shave your heads. Yeah. You get ready. Go get on. You can hold your own down there.
I think know she might can. Go with me, Holly. I think she might head down there to see the action.
I think she can handle it.
She probably actually would.
I think so.
She can put you on the back of her motorcycle and head on down there.
I think so. I think there's going to be some stories.
Are you, so now that you've got your fresh air, let's get to the nightlife, okay?
Are you ready for
I'm being laughed at because I think there's very little fresh air at a fish market.
Depends on how you define fresh.
Fresh fish!
I mean, it's all subjective, I believe. Yes, I think you're ready for a nightcap, though. You've both been busy. Yeah. I think you're ready for a nightcap.
I said at the beginning of the episode that anything might be possible,
yeah.
Right? So you're going to be invited now to a performance space, and you're not restricted to the current day. So we're going to have a little time travel element of our game right now. So my question for you, and you, again, can either choose together or separately, it's Victorian music hall or swinging 60s discotheque.
So do you want to go way back in time, or do you want to stay more contemporary? You should get to pick Zelly first, because Holly picked first.
I think I want to follow Holly. She made such a nice choice last time.
You get to pick first this time. Do you want to go to the way, way back, or somewhat contemporary?
I just really do love a discotheque. I think it's got pretty fun vibe to it. You want to go with me, Holly, or are you in the mood for something else?
You know, honestly, I think the Victorians were secretly, like, pretty fun. So I think I want to go to the music hall.
Ooh, fun. Let's find out what you both, what's behind door number one. All right. So let's start with the Victorian music hall. We're heading to the Canterbury Music Hall on the south side of the Thames in Lambeth. Now, before this time, there were plenty of taverns where people had sing-alongs, but the Canterbury was the very first one constructed for the sole purpose of being a music hall. And that was in 1856. I'm going to show you a picture, and it will be available on our website. And it looks like this. Ooh. Fun night out, right? So the orchestra seats down below, the typical kind of rounded balcony. Now, 1,500 people. It held 1,500 people. The entrance fee was very reasonable, and that's significant. It was 6 pence to get in downstairs, 9 upstairs. And so that would be about £2 to £3 today. Very affordable, and it kind of brought different elements of London together in one place. Now, in the earliest days, the music halls were exclusively kind of men's clubs. But the owner of this club, the Canterbury, his name is Charles Morton, he instituted a Thursday night ladies' night. He thought that they might provide a stabilizing ladies' night. He thought they might provide a stabilizing influence. Ha! No, maybe they did. I don't know. There was always a very bawdy atmosphere, kind of imagine burlesque, lots of double entendres in a very British way. Characters and tunes often made fun of the upper crust elite because it was so affordable. But this was a place where we could come and have some fun and make fun.
So you're saying that we would fit right in.
Oh, we're there.
That's what I'm hearing.
We're there.
Okay.
At one point in history, there might be 20 acts in a 4-hour time span. After that, they split it into 2 shows because it became so popular. Now, in addition to singers and, you know, bands and that kind of thing. There were trained dogs, there's jugglers, there's ventriloquists, cowboy acts, we're talking knife throwers, strongmen, drag artists, magicians, mentalists, like, cool, great night of theater, right? So many film stars got their start. Like, you can imagine people like Stan Laurel, Charlie Chaplin, they got their start, and Charlie Chaplin played this particular role. And also it was very significant for women because it was another option of earning money and getting out of some of the professions maybe they didn't want to be in. So it was kind of working. Some were able to make a living, and some actually became quite wealthy, and it changed their fortunes. That was kind of interesting. By 1895, there were actually 375 music halls in the city, in the greater city of London. But some of them were slapped up very quickly, like quick builds and shoddy construction. And sometimes that led to disasters that you can read about in the history books. But for tonight, let's just have an uproarious, fun-filled night at the Canterbury. That is your Victorian experience. But let's fast forward a bit to the swinging 60s for Zelly. We're going to the Marquee Club. The Marquee Club has changed locations a few times, but we're going to its Soho location, where it actually sat from 1964 to 1988. It began as a jazz club, but it really found its kind of clubly calling in rock and roll. The first band to ever play at this venue was an opening act called the Yardbirds. And in the next 24 years, actual residencies at this venue, Rolling Stones, they had their very first public performance at the Marquee. The Moody Blues played there as a residency. Led Zeppelin played there as a residency. You can imagine those early days, just mods packed into the club, dancing the Hully Gully and the Monkey and going nuts, Eric Clapton shredding on the guitar. On December 1st, 1964, The Who played their first of 22 consecutive Tuesday nights at the Marquee Club.
Yeah, just a regular Tuesday night.
Just another Tuesday night. They got 50 pounds for each gig, but Keith Moon remembers it. And he said, Keith Moon said, quote, "My most memorable moment at the Marquee was when Pete Townsend started smashing up his guitar. First time ever. Really, you should have seen the audience. Mouths open, great rows of teeth showing. You could almost count the cavities." King Crimson played there, yes. Jethro Tull, Jimi Hendrix Experience, Pink Floyd. Cream debuted there, as did the Stones, as did Fleetwood Mac, had their first shows there. Now, you're there in the 60s. Just to think about the future of this club. In the 70s, David Bowie was actually in their 60s and 70s under very different gigs and disguises and guises, as you can imagine. But there would be Queen and Genesis, late 70s, early 80s, The Clash, The Sex Pistols, Susie and the Banshees, Joy Division, The Police, Wham, The Cure. Everybody played this venue, the Marquee. And I wanted to just wrap it up with a quote from a guy, a publicity manager. His name was Greg Tesser. He said about the Marquee this, if you can imagine that club. And when I looked for photos of the club, that was there was only one really that showed. I was wondering, is there 200 people? Is there 1,000 people? I couldn't get a good picture because everyone's either taking a picture of the acts, the bands, or the lines that are wrapped around with teenagers outside. But this gave me a little idea about what it might have felt like to be a teenager in this club. He said that the Marquee, quote, "made me realize from watching all these great bands and singers at the club just how much their music emanated from the soul. It came from the guts. It was not contrived at all. For me, the Marquee encapsulated these words, freedom, innocence, and rebellion." What a cocktail. So that is your night on the town, ladies. But your night is not over yet.
No, I think Emma's in the corner reshaving her head. She's there with Zelly. They're rocking. But like she said, it's not over, ladies. You get to get back in our time capsule, the YLT TARDIS, so to speak. So you can decide if you want to, again, stay together. You can also separate, which as you can tell, you can get back together later and tell each other of your adventures. So you can go back a little further in time if you would like, about another 100-ish years or so, maybe a little more. Or you can come back up to contemporary times. So if you're a little tired of the time travel, you can go back home. And there's going to be stuff for you to do there. London's a vibrant city then, and it's a vibrant city now. Or you can choose to be very daring and to go back even further. What do you think, Sally?
Oh, I love time travel.
Are you ready to go backwards? I'd love to
go back another 100 years.
Okay, so you're going to actually go back even further because you were in, I should have specified, it would have been 100 years back from Holly's last destination. You're going back several hundred. I'll
still take it.
Okay.
Sounds great.
All right. And Holly, are you going to join Zelly or do you think you're going to go have another adventure and catch up with her later? Do you want to come back to regular, to our contemporary times? See what our fabulous city has to offer you.
I think in this case, yes, I'm going to go with contemporary London. I don't know how I feel about ancient time travel.
We're not going back quite that far, but Holly, you have champagne taste, I'll tell you. Because after your whole Sloan adventure, now you're in contemporary London, and there are some expensive cocktails available in London. I'm going to just read off a few cocktails that you can get at a few different bars, and I want you to tell me which one you think you might want, and we'll go there. Okay. So here's your choices. Your first choice is the BB King. You can get the BB King at a place called the Purple Bar. Okay. Your next choice, and actually there's two choices at this particular bar. This is a famous bar called the American Bar. It's been in London for a long, long time. And at the London or at the American Bar in London, you can get either a Sazerac or a daiquiri. Sounds simple enough, but we'll see. You can also get a diamond cocktail at the Sheraton Park Hotel. So your choices are the BB King at the Purple Bar. You can go to the American Bar and get a daiquiri or a Sazerac. Or you can get a diamond cocktail at the Sheraton Park Hotel.
So since I'm wearing my new Burberry coat from Sloane Street,
apparently,
I think I am going to go for that diamond cocktail.
I don't think you're going to be sorry. I mean, you are just high on the hog. So I learned about this, by the way, on the appropriately named capitalist.com. And it is capitalism run amok. So the diamond cocktail from the Sheraton Park Hotel, it's only going to set you back £4,350.
For not one drink?
Well, yeah. Don't get greedy, Holly. Okay. Come on.
Just check it. Just check it.
Yeah.
You want to make it a double?
I mean, if you want to. I mean, it's YLT money only goes so far, okay? So you might be saying, all right, Jen, why does it cost that much? Well, it might have something to do with the fact that there is a real diamond included with the drink. You heard this correctly, a real diamond. The stone can be customized. You can actually swap it out for another stone of choice if you'd like, which I think that's fair for £4,350, that there should be a little leeway there. But the ingredients in the drink also really elevate this cocktail like you've never seen. There's a blend of several types of cognac in it, each reaching about $1,000 per bottle. It goes on. There's also some Charles Heidsieck, and I'm not fancy enough to know if I'm pronouncing that correctly, so fans, you can tell me in the comments if I'm just being really not up to snuff with the diamond cocktails. But yes, this particular champagne is a vintage from 2001, and that's what they're choosing. So it's going to be a combination of these nice cognacs and champagne with a diamond that you yourself get to choose. So yes, wear your Burberry, have your diamond cocktail. You are posh spice, my friend. You are ready to go.
All right.
Okay, fish market Zelly.
I'm watching my entire experience just take on a form of its own.
Well, there's a positive to everything. You're getting to travel back in time. I'm new experience. A ball. It's I'm right. A ball. It's new experiences. Okay, you're going to go back to Georgian England. Okay? Fabulous architecture, right? But unfortunately, you do get to admire, well, you get to admire the architecture, but you are for your cocktail. You're there, as we've talked about in our previous episode, you're there during the gin craze. And your cocktail is coming, compliments of our friend, Captain Dudley Bradstreet. Yes, that's right. He's the one who came up with the whole concept of the Puss in Mew. And if you haven't listened to our gin craze episode yet, it's the first ever vending machine. And I mean, the good news is you don't have to have the money that Holly did for your cocktail. So the Puss in Mew is a vending machine. It looks like a lion's head against the wall. Now, I do need you to say the following. I need you to walk up to our cat here and say, Puss, give me 2 penny worth of gin.
Puss, give me 2 penny worth of gin.
Well, and then our good friend, Captain Dudley, put your coins right here in the slot.
There they go.
Thank you. Okay, now, if you could put your mouth on this lead pipe. Don't be shy.
Put your mouth on the lead pipe. This is not very sanitary.
Well, it's okay. Captain Dudley is going to blow the gin. He's going to put his mouth on the other side. And he's going to blow the gin right down into your mouth.
Oh, now, my
gosh. As we learned during the gin craze episode, this isn't Tanqueray or This is Rotgut at its finest. I don't think this particular batch is cut with arsenic, but you don't know. Sometimes turpentine can make its way in there. But hey, I mean, what can you guess? It's 2 penny worth. Okay?
I'm worth every penny.
Worth every penny. So get your fill, because Holly's enjoying her diamond cocktail. You're going to need to meet back up with her. Don't worry about the lead. It's okay.
Jen?
Yeah.
Does this gin pair well with fish?
Oh, absolutely. It's delightful with fish.
Yeah, and that fish market is open right now. So.
It's been there for 800 years.
Oh, my goodness.
So, yeah. So,
she won't want me breathing on her either.
So, yes, that was, you were a good sport.
A nice little nightcap there.
It was a nice little nightcap. So, I'm thinking you all must be getting somewhat hungry maybe again, or perhaps tired, or maybe both, right? So, I think it's probably about time to go back to the flat. And, Holly, I know you've been living like the queen, but it's time to come back down to earth. Okay, our money only goes so far. So we're going to go back to your flat. I know you're hungry, but we're done eating out. Okay, you're going to find something in the flat. And I've got a list of foods.
This little midnight snack.
Little midnight munchies. You know, it's the things that if you were in London, maybe you've gone to Tesco and you've loaded up your fridge or freezer. So let's have a snack. So what I'm going to have you do is pick a number, 1 through 15. And that's going to say what it is you pull out of the fridge for a snack. Okay? So 1 through 15. Go ahead. Let's see. Zelly picked first, although I kind of feel bad. I mean, she is sucking gin from all that. Maybe she should go
to clear that out of her mouth.
Yeah, you're going to have to wait. You just had a diamond cocktail. She needs something. She needs something in her stomach. So... Go ahead, Zelly. Why don't you just pick a number 1 through 15, and we'll let you know what you're going to have.
All right. Well, I'm feeling like I'm on a downward spiral, so I think I'm going to go with the lucky number 13.
Okay.
All right. Just bold. Dig on in. Yes.
Double down.
Zelly, and I've got to give some credit to BuzzFeed, because good old BuzzFeed, they make these nice lists, and these are lists of drunken food that Brits actually eat, is according. So, Brits, if you have a problem with this list, you take it up with BuzzFeed, not YLT, okay? Zelly, you have chosen a frozen pizza. Not bad. frozen pizza in the oven.
Any anchovies on it?
No, no. You can jazz it up a little bit.
You can always bring them back from Billingsgate.
You've got some. You might have some in your pocket. I think you might, actually. I've got to... No, you're sick of fish. Actually, how about a frozen pizza with a can of Heinz beans on top? Dress it up a little bit.
Okay.
Baked bean pizza?
Nice.
Okay.
Everyone around me is nodding. Okay.
Okay. That's what you're having. I mean, this is BuzzFeed says it's good if you've had lead and pipe gin.
I'm sure if I've had enough gin, it's probably fantastic.
I think anything will be fantastic after that, to be honest. Okay, Miss Diamond.
Have you ever had this? I
haven't had the pizza with beans. I mean, I've eaten Heinz beans on toast.
Yeah, right.
And I've grabbed the cheap frozen pizzas out of Tesco.
I say don't knock it till you've tried it.
I mean, the beans are very tomato based. They're not sweet, like barbecue baked beans. They're like a tomato vinegar type base.
That'd be great on a pizza.
I think so. I mean, I think your belly needs it, to be honest.
Probably won't tell the difference.
Yeah. If you have any taste buds
all
left.
The parts of it sound good. Yes.
All right. Holly. 1 through 15.
I think after a night out, I'm going to go for a number 8.
Oh, Mare's new.
Yeah.
That's a mind reading. Look at that. Wow. Well, Holly, you're also going to the freezer. I can't say that I've ever had this. If you're familiar with this, drop us a comment. They're frozen cheeseburgers called Rustlers. If you look at the box, it kind of has this sort of American West theme on the box.
The big one.
The big one.
I'll go for that.
It says best ever taste for half the price. So apparently they're on sale right now. And according to BuzzFeed, it says the only time it should be acceptable. Sorry, I'm gonna lie. It should be acceptable to eat a Rustlers burger is when you're too drunk to make a coherent order at the kebab shop. So, with a talk up like that, So we're ending the night after all of that. We've time traveled. We've had diamond cocktails. We've had lead and pipe gin. We've had Emma. And we're ending it back in the flat with Heinz beans on pizza and Rustlers.
Better than dead in the desert. Thanks. That's how we run it here at the Yesterday's London Times. We want to thank you both for being such good sports about it all.
And we hope you'll come back. And listeners, if you have any ideas of places we could visit or any ideas for a future Choose Your Own Adventure, hit us up with some comments on our Twitter at YLTpod, at YLT_pod, or visit us on our website and let us know what you think.
We'll see you next time. Thanks, Jen. Thanks, Ellie. Thanks, Holly. This is Mares. Thanks for listening to Yesterday's London Times.
Woo!
Thanks for listening and thinking along with us. We hope you enjoyed this segment of our journey.
Our music is from the album Astral Gate, used with permission of the artists Lucas Perny and Miroslav Kolar. Audio mixing by DJ Kensington.